Well, Frank, it's so fun, such a treat for me to have the chance to sit down and to talk with you. The couple years that I've been on staff here, I have just appreciated your friendship and the joy that you bring to our team and the laughter that you bring. You've been at our church, how many years exactly has it been now?
28 years.
Oh, 28.
28 long years for some people.
Okay. Yeah, I'm 28 years old, so
I was before you.
Yeah.
In a way.
That's amazing.
Yeah, that is incredible.
Frank, it is no secret that you are the guy who time and time again shows up for people in kind of their moments of greatest need. You've probably seen the inside of more hospital rooms and more homes than anybody around. And we're just grateful for you and for the gift that your pastoral presence has been to our church and our community.
Thanks, Abby.
Yeah, absolutely. How many funeral services do you think you have done since the time you arrived at our church? Actually, how many funeral services do you think you've done total?
Well, it's hard to tell. Before I came here, I really didn't do that many. But since I arrived here, I would guess a little over 3,000 services. Yeah, that's a lot.
That's amazing.
That's a lot. It's amazing to me. I never would have thought that when I arrived here, this would be one of the primary things that I end up doing. But it's a real blessing. Okay. It's a real gift to be able to do it.
Yeah. So you have over 3,000 experiences doing funerals. Are there any that like stick out to you as being more memorable than others, or kind of looking back, what strikes you as some that were different, perhaps?
Well, everyone is unique, but when you ask me that kind of a question, the first thing that comes to my mind is the time I was asked to do a funeral for a family where the cremated remains were to be placed in a full grave.
Okay.
Well, a full grave is about 6 or 7 feet deep.
Okay.
The container of cremated remains are very small, and the question was, how do we get the container into the grave?
Okay.
Guess how it happened, Abby?
You don't want to guess.
Well, I had to go down into the grave and gently put the remains in the corner and then climb back out.
Okay. The things they don't teach you at seminary.
I know.
What's going through your mind when you're down there?
Well, the first thing that I thought of was they didn't teach me this in seminary.
Yeah.
It's just something I had to do.
Yeah.
And, but it's one of those things that every service, they're all unique.
Yeah.
You know, everyone's different. Everyone's needs are different. And everyone's response is different.
Yeah. Yeah, I can only imagine over kind of that many years and walking with people in this really kind of tender, delicate, sweet, hard time in their life. What are some things that you personally have been touched by or some learnings that you have as a result of that experience?
Well, I think over all those years, there are so many things that you end up picking up, and I kind of think that your own spiritual life changes as a result of doing services and being involved with families at some of the deepest points of their life. It's really a phenomenal gift to be able to walk with folks through times of crisis and pain and loss. And you immediately enter into their lives. You become a family member to countless number of families. But, you know, I think one of the first things that I've realized is that for people, our view of death shapes our view of life. So how we look at the end kind of marks how we look at the beginning and what that all means. I mean, one of the things I can guarantee you is that everyone is going to face death. That's like 100%.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of things I know totally, but that one I know totally.
Yeah.
And death becomes part of the process of life. And somewhere along the lines, I think we have to think about it. It's a hard thing for people to think about. Nobody wants to think about it or talk about it. But the Bible sure has a couple of things to say about it. I love Paul's comment in 2 Corinthians, where he makes this comment that though outwardly we are wasting away, just think about that, though outwardly we are wasting away, that's the process of death, inwardly we are being renewed day by day. That's the process of life. Mm-hmm. So outwardly we're wasting away. To me, that's a reminder of what happens to me, what happens to my body. Apparently, my wife tells me I make noise getting in and out of my car now. That's a sign of my body wasting away.
Hey, I think I heard that on the way here today.
Yeah, see? Well, it doesn't always happen.
I didn't want to bring it up, but now that you mentioned it.
Well, thank you, Abby. I just thought I'd do that myself. Yeah. But, you know, that's the part of the process that's there for everyone. But then we have this choice about what happens inwardly. And what happens inwardly is that constant renewal by God. And Paul caught that. So somehow we have to think about what that process is. We're going to face death, and our body continues to remind us that we're heading towards that. But then what God does on the inside is just so much more important. You know, if we think that there's nothing after we die, then we can kind of live our life any way we want. And it seems to me there isn't a whole lot of purpose or meaning. But if we understand that there is life after death, then we better get a sense of what that should look like. And it seems to me that one of the things that I've learned from walking with folks through death so often is the importance of life. And so what we do, if we sort of understand the final, the ending of the physical story of life, then it changes how we live our life day to day and realize that there's a purpose and there's a reason for all of this.
I want to go back to something you said that I think is really important. Death is, it's not something we think about much. It's not something as a culture that we talk about much. There's a lot of kind of fear, unspoken fear around that process and that moment. As you've kind of been with people in what you've called this real like sacred space, what are some of the fears that people have voiced in that time, or the fears that you've noticed in people?
Well, I think the first factor is we don't know a whole lot about death. And so there's kind of a darkness associated with it. We're not sure what it will all look like and so what will happen. But sometimes one of the first things I think of when I'm with families where death is inevitable, there's kind of two questions that I always think you can ask. The first one is, are you afraid? And folks will usually say, it's unusual for people not to be afraid. The next part of it is, well, are you afraid of the process of what's going to happen before you die? Or are you afraid of what's going to happen after you die? The piece before death, we've got lots of things in place to help people walk through that, whether it be hospitals, doctors, nurses, technicians. And so I can't help too much with that. But the other question is, are you afraid of what's going to happen after? That's one that we in the Christian community have a voice in. And I think that's the most important question anyway. But the reality for folks is very often you can walk a Christian walk your whole life. And sometimes I've seen, even at the very end, people will kind of have a break. And in that final few days, sometimes people really worry, well, am I really good enough? Is this going to happen? And to me, that's kind of a misunderstanding of the grace of God, because God, through Jesus Christ, ensures that that walk will take place into eternity for us.
Right. You mentioned earlier that your father actually had that experience where he was a man of faith his entire life and a very strong, vibrant faith in Jesus, it sounds like. And he got to those kind of final moments and had had some panic and anxiety as he faced death. And you mentioned that there was one thing that kind of calmed his spirit. Would you mind?
Yeah, sure. No, so for my father, he was a strong Christian his whole life. And it was kind of surprising to us that in that last week or so, he started panicking and wondering about what was going to happen to him, wondering whether he'd been such a sinner that he wasn't going to make it to heaven. And my wife Judy was with him in that last week of his life. And the one thing that was able to calm him was her singing. She would sing hymns to him and kind of the things that medication couldn't do in those moments. The Word of God in those hymns that he'd grown up with were just something that calmed his spirit and his soul. And hymns like Abide With Me, which was my father's favorite hymn, and Judy just singing that to him gave him a tremendous sense of peace. So it reminds me again that the gospel and the Word of God is crucial, even in those last minutes for us. And it's okay to doubt. It's okay. I think for my father, too, it was all right to ask those questions and to wonder at the end. That's the human part of our life. It's all right. Yeah. A lot of us have questions through our life, but also at the very end.
Yeah. As you're saying that, I'm thinking back to my grandfather who passed away just a couple years ago, and I had the chance to spend his last couple days with him and sitting on his bed mm-hmm. with him. And I remember he asked for Johnny Cash music, and then I guess what Johnny Cash couldn't do for him, he asked for the Psalms. He asked if I would read him the Psalms. And we did that. And it was, we read the Psalms in the book of John, I think. Yeah. But it was just a sweet, sweet moment. And I know you've talked a little bit about kind of the power of the Psalms for people.
Oh, gosh, yeah. I think particularly for some of our older folks, when they face death, there is a phenomenal sense of comfort in the Psalms. And part of it I've come to realize is the Psalms are very raw. They're real emotion. They're authentic. There's nothing fake about them. The ones that are written from a point of pain or hurt or wonder or anger. And I think at some level, that's how we resonate with all of that. I think of Psalm 23, which to me is probably the most well-known psalm. If you have a group of people who aren't kind of scripturally literate, as soon as I start reading the 23rd Psalm, you can watch them kind of nod. But that's one of those psalms, again, that speaks to God's role in our life, now, in the transition from here to eternity, and then in eternity. And it's just a phenomenal thing.
I want to ask, you know, we've talked a little bit now about scripture and about comforting folks who have had a lifelong relationship or who have some kind of relationship mm-hmm. with God and you know, comforting them in that death is the mm-hmm. continuation of that relationship when we go to be with God eternally.
Yeah.
But what about the phone calls that you get or the situations where you show up on the scene and there isn't that either belief or there isn't a foundation in Jesus Christ? How do you navigate those moments and how do you offer comfort to people in those moments?
Yeah.
What does that look like for you?
Well, Abby, that's a really good question, and it's probably one of the most difficult areas of all of this. But so the first thing that I always recognize is that I can't make any judgment calls on anyone. I'm so grateful that God does that. I have no idea, and I'm happy that I don't have any idea. I don't have any idea about a lot of things, but that's one that I particularly
don't. Don't sell yourself short.
No, I know it. I understand it. And so I always figure, well, that's up to God. So in those situations, all I can do is share with people what this relationship with Christ means to me.
Yeah.
And that's then with integrity. But I can think of a number of instances where I've walked into a situation where somebody didn't believe. There's one that comes to my mind right now. And I got a call from a family who don't go to church, don't go to our church, don't go to any church. But the children of this lady called and asked if I could come and pay a visit. Their mother was dying, and she was very distressed, very uncomfortable. And so I said, of course, and it just happened to be a number of blocks from the church. I drove over in the afternoon, and the husband answered the door, and I told him who I was, what I came to do, and he said, well, come on into the living room, and we talked, we chatted, and I said, well, I'd like to go in and see your wife. He says, well, I don't think that's possible right now because she's sleeping. I said, okay, I'll come back. I went back to the office. A little bit later, I got a call from the daughter asking how everything went. And I said, well, your father did a pretty good job of keeping me away from your mother. And she said, oh, well, we'll talk to him. Would you consider coming back? I said, of course I would. So the next day, I actually went back. The kids were there with Dad, let me into the house, walked me down the hallway to the bedroom, ushered me into the bedroom and closed the door. And there I was. Yeah, there I was with this lady who I didn't know. And I still remember her sitting in the corner.
Yeah.
And a really sweet lady. She'd been a professor. And so we got to talk. I just introduced myself, told her a little bit about who I was and what I did. And I said that the kids were kind of worried about her. And I said, you know, I asked the questions. What are you afraid of? Are you afraid of the process? Are you afraid of what's going to happen after? And she said, well, I don't know what's going to happen after. And I said, well, would you like me to tell you? And I kind of shared a little bit of John 14 with her and did it in very plain, simple language.
Yeah.
And in the course of a couple of minutes, she said, well, I want that.
Yeah. Tell us about John 14. I know you almost have it memorized. Yeah. So,
well, John 14 is one of my absolute favorite passages. And in it, Jesus is talking to his disciples about his own death. And he says, don't let your hearts be troubled. And in my vernacular, hey guys, don't worry. Yeah. Don't let your hearts be troubled. Trust in God, trust also in me. In my Father's house are many rooms. If it weren't so, I would have told you. And I'm going there to prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place, I will come back and I'll bring you with me that you also may be where I am. And I think that last phrase kind of got this lady. And so she accepted Christ. A little bit later, I got a call from the daughter saying, what happened with my mom? I said, what do you mean? She said, mom is different. She's so calm and so at peace. I said, your mom didn't tell you. She said, no. I said, well, your mom became a Christian this afternoon. Whoa. And I think, you know, those kind of moments are repeated time after time, because it's, again, in that last moment, people who don't know Christ have no hope. And they get agitated, whether they are willing to admit it or not. But there's that fear of death again that we talked about that's really there. And then it's the gospel that provides it. I mean, that line where Jesus says, when everything is ready, I'm going to come back and bring you with me that you may be where I am. I think it's one of the most incredible statements in Scripture about death, because for us, death can be very fearful. I mean, for most people, we're afraid. We don't know what to expect. Yep. And Jesus says, look, in your vernacular, I got this. Yeah. I'm all over this. I'm all over this. When everything is ready there, I'm going to come back and I'm going to get you. So we don't walk through that dark valley of Psalm 23 by ourselves, but we now have this image of Jesus putting his arm around us and taking us home. You know, there's a, if I could, there's this great example of a young girl who was in the hospital, and the family called. And she had come to the end of her life. She was a teenager, and she was on life support. And the parents called because they needed to remove life support that day, knew she was going to die, but wanted a pastor there to pray with her. Came into the hospital room, and I still can remember it as if it was yesterday. I was standing at the foot of the bed. The technicians removed the breathing tube, removed all the support, all the tubes, everything was gone. And this little girl's laying there. The family was standing on one side of the bed. And I prayed. And then in my mind's eye, I saw John 14 come to life. And the parents were hanging on to this little girl, not wanting to let go, which is totally understandable as a parent. But in my brain, I saw Jesus standing on the other side of that bed, and he had his arms like this, ready to put them underneath this little girl. Now, in my brain, right? And I hear Jesus saying, it's okay. You take as long as you need, but when you're ready, it's okay to let go. I've got her. Just trust me. I've got her. That's John 14. And there was a moment where the parents actually stepped back, and I could just see Jesus scooping this little girl up and whisking her off to heaven. And I think that's the process of death. Jesus promises in John 14, I'm going to come back. I'm going to bring you with me so you may be where I am. But at some level, we have to believe that. When we believe it, that takes some of the fear away.
Frank, I would love it if you would just be willing to share. I know a couple years ago, almost 2 years exactly now, your 6-year-old grandson, Jacob, actually died as a result of almost a lifelong battle with cancer. And I know that there were a lot of folks in our church that kind of walked with you through that and wept with you through that. And I wonder, what was that like for you personally, having been the guy that shows up for other people? What was it like to be in the room with someone who's your own, who you love so dearly, and having to go through that? What did you learn? What do you struggle with?
Well, Abby, I think the first thing that you just kind of mentioned is that you can't do this alone, and it's one of the reasons why we need church. It's why we need each other. It's why we need life groups. It's why we need to get connected. Because to try and handle death, let's just call it that, to try and handle death on your own is really remarkably difficult. It's almost impossible. So when you do it with community, you grow together as a community as well. So the whole journey of Jacob was diagnosed when he was 1 year old, and he died when he was 6 and a half. And it was a long, arduous journey of doctor's appointments and tests and medication and radiation and just all kinds of stuff that we wouldn't ever want to put on a little child. But I chose from the very, our family chose from the very beginning to share that wasn't some family secret deal. I just shared that with everybody that knew me at the time. And what we found was that we were not alone. There were lots of other folks who had walked through this, who had lost children. And my constituency is a little bit older, so they lost children, we're talking 50 or 60 years ago. And it was still as fresh for them as it was for us. But in seeing that these people managed and they got through their life and they were living their life was just a, kind of a great example to me that you can get through this. I think the reality is you don't ever get over death. You don't get over the loss of somebody that you love. But you can get through it. So the question then is, well, how do you get through it, right? So you get through it with community, with having other people around you. Now, not everyone said the right thing. People meant well. Everybody meant well. But, you know, some people made kind of ludicrous comments. We had more medical opportunities offered to us of different kinds of strange things. And all of that is, I understood where it came from. It came from a caring, loving place. But, so first of all, we came through it with a family, with our church family, and that's why I love our church. Yeah. It's been years and years of walking through various events. It isn't just me going through it, but it's you, it's somebody else, and so we do that together. That's why we have church, and I would say hooray for church. We need it. God had a great idea. It was brilliant. Well, then the actual event of Jacob's death, let me just say that the months leading up to when we were kind of sure that this was going to happen, I got scared about me. I got scared about the fact that I probably would get really angry with God because I didn't understand it. I didn't get how a one-year-old could get something as horrible as brain cancer. And watching him over all those years and then constantly being filled with hope that they'd found something, and then we prayed and prayed and prayed. Groups prayed. People prayed all over the world for Jacob. And guess what? God still took him home. But I was afraid that when he finally died, that I would get really angry with God because I didn't understand any of this. And the reality of it is I didn't. I still remember very well the day that he went to be with God. And I wasn't angry that day, and I wasn't angry the next day. And I kept thinking, okay, this is going to happen. But it didn't. And in the moment of his death, the most poignant day of my life, Jacob with his mom and dad live about 75 miles away from our home. And in the morning I called to check on my wife to see how she was doing. And she said, well, Jacob wants to talk to you that morning. And so Jacob gets on the phone and we have a little discussion. I said, how are you feeling? He says, well, I'm really tired and sleepy, Opa. He calls me Opa. And I said, well, it's going to be okay, son, and I'm going to come and see you tomorrow. Okay, well, I hope you have a good day at work today, is what he said. And talked to Judy again and then hung up the phone. And a couple of minutes later, she texted me. And she said, Jacob asked me to text you to tell you to come. So obviously, an hour or so later, I got in my car and I drove to him. So it was just really strange because he obviously knew at some level that that was going to be the day. And that actually was the day he died. The house was inundated with people coming and going all day. And Jacob was in a hospital bed in the family room. And everybody that came in, or a lot of people, he said, well, come lay down with me. It was like he was a little guy who was saying goodbye to everybody. Well, I think at 7:30 at night, I think that's when Jesus took him. But his body stayed, and it struggled, and it was the most horrific 7:30 to 11:30 that night. Probably the most horrific time of my life. And we were all on the bed with him, my wife, our two other grandkids, and his mom and dad. And then we realized at 11:30, that was that final moment when he gasped. But I kept assuring my daughter all the way through the evening, he's not here anymore, sweetheart. Jesus already took him. I think Jesus took him at 7:30. He scooped his hands under Jacob and said, okay, Jacob, it's time for you to come home. And we just had to struggle through those next 4 hours. Again, even today, I don't understand quite what those 4 hours were all about. It was complicated and it was very, very difficult. But let me tell you, Jacob had one last hurrah. A friend of mine, I don't know how many people have funeral directors and cemeteries on their quick dial on the phone, but I do. And one of my very good friends, one of my very good friends is a funeral director, and he had promised to take care of things. And I called him earlier in the day, and I said, you know, I don't expect you to drive all the way out here because it's going to happen tonight. And he said, no, I'm going to come. And I said, okay. So at 11:30, I called him, woke him up, and he got dressed and got in his van and came over. Well, my daughter's big concern, Sandy's big concern was, are they going to come in a hearse to pick him up? And I said, no, sweetheart, they'll come in a van unmarked. Nobody will know. She didn't want the whole neighborhood all upset. Boy. Well, they live in a cul-de-sac. And so at about 1:30 in the morning, the van shows up. And the funeral director comes in. We take care of everything. We wrap Jacob, put him on a gurney, and took him outside. And I closed the door, and the funeral director's out in the middle of the cul-de-sac with his van, and he clicks the clicker, and the alarm goes off on his van. And he clicks the clicker, and the alarm keeps going. And he clicks the clicker, and it kept going, and the lights are going on the street. And I said to my daughter, that was Jacob's farewell. That was that last laugh that he had on all of us.
Yeah.
But a tough, tough moment.
So Frank, as we kind of wrap up, I'm just, what are some words of wisdom that you would leave with us as we think about kind of how to navigate life, given the reality that death is, like you said, a 100% guarantee? And given your experience, what words would you leave us with?
Well, I think one of the things to always realize is that around death, we've got to be real. And that means we have to face the reality of it earlier in life. I mean, even for somebody like you, Abby, I know that's a hard thing because you're 28, you're going to live forever, right?
Nope. If I've learned anything.
But you think you will.
Yeah, no, there are days.
Yeah.
There certainly are days.
So I think for folks that are younger, somewhere in our brain, start thinking about this because it comes back to the quality of our life, the foundation of our life, how we live day to day has to do, I think, to some degree with how we think we're going to die.
Yeah.
There is so much value in life, and life is such a precious gift. You realize it sometimes at the end, and I get to see it all the time. When I'm with families towards the end or when I'm dealing with death, one of the things that always comes to my mind is, this is not about what we're taking away, because any service I've ever done, I have yet to meet anybody whose service I've done who's taken something with them.
Yeah.
Nobody takes anything away. I sometimes stand in the cemetery and I look around and I go, everybody here left everything behind.
Yeah.
There's a great story of a gentleman who decided he wanted to be buried in his Mercedes, and this is actually one of the cemeteries here.
Okay.
And the cemetery said, we can't do that. And so he decided he would take the grill off his Mercedes, and that would be his tombstone.
Hmm.
And whenever I walk by that particular grave, I always think, wow, that's humanity. That's what we think, that somehow we're going to be connected. Well, we're not. None of us are going to take anything with us. So it has to do about what we leave behind. Well, what are we leaving behind? The Psalms talk about that. You know, there's a Psalm that says, consider the works of my hands. Yes, consider the works of my hands. And that's Psalm 90, verse 17. But what that verse says is, we want to have some legacy. I want to be remembered somehow. Well, how are we going to be remembered? It isn't by what we accomplish. It isn't about what we own. It isn't about what we drive. It isn't about where we live. Mm-hmm. It isn't about what title we have. But I think it has to do with how we love.
Mm-hmm.
How we love God, how we love Jesus, how we love each other. Because ultimately, it's all about relationships, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, you think about, well, just you and I and our friendship and our ability to talk about a subject that's pretty complicated and pretty heavy. But we're able to do that because we are considerate of each other. We care for each other, right?
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
You care,
yeah, absolutely.
You care.
I'm just asking.
I'm just asking because you weren't nodding. But so in the final analysis, it's about love.